Okay, we'll call to order the House Revenue Committee. Welcome everybody here today. To begin with the middle of the agenda today, Representative Morris Sent is here. So we will invite him up. I think we're just going to get a brief bit of testimony on House Bill 2831 from him. Welcome, Representative Morris Sent. Nick, you want to tell us what this is about first?
Basically, it deals with motor fuel taxes, and in specific, the used fuel tax, which is you have a motor fuel tax on gasoline, and then the used fuel tax applies to diesel fuel and all other fuels that are used to propel motor vehicles. And what this bill does is to require the Department of Revenue essentially to refund any tax paid when the fuel used for the propulsion of a motor vehicle is either propane or natural gas. So any of these special fuels other than diesel.
Representative Morissette, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. I had done some research on this bill. I was waiting for more information to come in. I met with the Department of Transportation this morning. Joan Plank, who is the manager of government relations section, informed me that their figures show that there would be a $500,000 fiscal impact, revenue impact on this bill. The people that I've worked with led me to believe that it wouldn't be a significant impact, and so what we would appreciate having is some time to sit down with the Department of Transportation and with some proponents to be sure what the fiscal impact is. I'm not about to propose legislation that would have a large negative impact on the road fund. I do think we need to encourage alternative fuel vehicles, though. So I would like some time to gather some information, and if I feel it's warranted, I would come back to the committee and present a case for that. But I do want to work with the Department of Transportation in the meantime.
That's fine. We have some folks signed up to testify today. My inclination would be to go ahead and take their testimony while they're here today, but then we'll just recess the hearing and then wait for you to get back to us.
Okay. Yes.
All right, everybody. Any questions for Representative Morissette while he's here?
One on bill, is this intended to get after ethanol at all as well? Or is that part of what you're doing? Or just
well, natural gas, the use of pure natural gas vehicles would be
your goal.
The goal.
You're not looking at, sometimes we, Mr. Chair, this seems to me sometimes the gas has an ethanol mix in it. You're not.
No,
that is. Provide a rebate for the proportion of.
No, under this bill, if you buy gasoline, whatever gasoline you buy, you would pay the fuel tax. This bill would be one that the user would have to initiate the rebate, and unless they initiated a request to show that they have paid the taxes and they qualify under this bill, they would not receive a rebate. And I don't think it would impact as large a number of people or the revenue impact as the Department of Transportation says that it will, but I certainly want to talk with them first.
Okay. And just to your question about ethanol, I see we also have on our desks, and she wasn't able to testify today, but Lana Butterfield distributed some materials from the Northwest Propane Gas Association, so something else around this. Anything else for Representative Morissette? All right, thanks very much.
Okay, thank you.
We'll recess that hearing. And those of you who are here, let's see, Steve Vincent, Andrea? Thank you. And John O'Shell? We will come back to this still today for those of you who are signed up to testify. Or would you rather wait? You'd rather wait. Andrea would rather wait. Steve Vincent? You'll take a pass. And Mr. O'Shell?
Take a pass.
Okay, then we will have the entire cast and crew back for the rerun later this. I guess we don't know. Representative Morissette will let us know when he's ready. We'll put it back up on the schedule. Okay, in that case, then I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2831 and proceed to House Bill 2047 and open a public hearing on that. Nick, is that you?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Dick Yates, Legislative Revenue. Bill comes to House revenue from Agriculture and Forestry, where it was voted out with a do-pass recommendation. Vote was 6 in favor, 1 against, 2 excused. What the bill does is to allocate, subject to the availability of funds, 1.2% of net proceeds of lottery. And it allocates the first $3.6 million of that to the county fair account, and any excess over 3.6, so the 1.2%, would be allocated to the Oregon County Fair account.
So you want to explain to us the difference between those accounts?
The county fair account is set up and allows the county fair commission to, first of all, determine the merit rating for various fairs around the state, and then to allocate the monies that are available to it out to those fairs based on that merit system. So it's not an equal amount necessarily going to each county. The Oregon County Affair account was established, actually you'd think of it more as a trust fund, and money is going into that trust fund, and nothing is, as my understanding, at least to this point, nothing has been distributed from that. What the current law says is that distributions will begin in 2003 or any year in which the balance of that fund reaches $40 million.
And I think for the members, you've distributed a copy of Chapter 796 from 1995.
That's correct.
That's what created this trust fund.
That's correct.
Which is different than the administrative or the funding fund, the distribution fund. Yeah. Okay. Yes, Representative Hass.
How much is in that fund right now? Trust fund, if anything.
I mean.
Maybe some of our witnesses know. John McCulley probably knows. He does. We'll ask him. He signed up to testify. Okay, so we have these two funds.
Okay. And this, as I said, is you're talking on a full biennial basis of a little over $7 million in terms of what the current lottery forecast is. As I read the bill, it's going to take effect really January, so you're getting 18 months out of the next biennium that it affects. That will still generate over $3.6 million, so you would get $3.6 million going into being controlled by the County Fair Commission, but being distributed not on a merit basis, but back on an equal county grant. Mm-hmm. And the balance then, which is about 1.89, I think is my estimate here, 1.69, would go into the Oregon County Fair account and begin to further increase that balance, whatever it is. And the other part of the last part of the bill then does change this so that those distributions don't necessarily begin in 2003, but they must begin by 2009.
Okay. Does that make the funding under the 1.2 a gap kind of funding stream with the anticipation then that it would be replaced in 2009? By funding out of the Oregon County Fair account? Is that just...
There's nothing here that would stop the funding at that time, so it would presumably continue. The way the Oregon County Fair account is set up, only 90% of the interest and earnings can be paid out in any year, so the fund, if you like, is protected.
Mm-hmm.
And as this money flowed in, and that would continue to build that.
I just been noticing this, though, that you've got a 2009 sunset date on the bill. I was wondering if there was a connection there between that sunset date and the, we'll find out. We can ask the witnesses who testify. We have, is that all, or did you want to? Okay, thank you. Let's bring up Senator Ferrioli and Representative Johnson together, if you care to join us. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Such arm wrestle.
I would defer to Senator Ferrioli.
Well, Senator Ferrioli.
And I was just about to defer to the good representative.
Well,
that would be smart, actually.
Well, as I do wish to appear smart to the committee.
Representative Johnson.
All right. Instead of the two of us arm wrestling up here, I'll go first. I'm Betsy Johnson. I'm the state representative from House District 1. Offering any testimony, raising any concerns about county fairs is a little like testifying against motherhood, the flag, and apple pie, but I'm really here today because I do care about fairs. I grew up in Redmond. My friends were all 4-H'ers, and I spent a lot of time with them. I visit my own county fairs in Clatsop and Columbia County regularly, buy lots of animals and give them away. I like county fairs. I've spent a lot of time watching the development of House Bill 2047. I made a trip down to Eugene to meet with the board of the fair associations, attended the annual meeting in Portland, and have had lots of individual contacts with fair managers. I'd like to acknowledge Denny Holmes, who's the manager of the Clatsop County Fair today. He's here today. I have two concerns about House Bill 2047. One of them is a policy question, whether or not it's appropriate to set aside pieces of the lottery for these sorts of activities, and I'll leave that up to my colleagues to debate and decide. Also, the question of how appropriate it is for the state to run programs off large accumulations of money. And again, that's a policy question that I'm sure will be debated in the building. My second concern, and the real purpose of my testimony today, is an accountability question. After learning more about the difficulties that some fairs were experiencing, I came to the conclusion that simply creating a fund and asking for no accountability on the part of county fairs was not acceptable. Consequently, in collaboration with the county fairs and with Mr. McCulley's agreement and help, I asked legislative counsel to draft an accountability bill. It is House Bill 3905, but it's still in the queue somewhere. It hasn't appeared yet. That I hope will be considered in the context of this bill. In my accountability bill, I'm requiring the fairs, in summary, to make standardized reports to their commission that would touch on the areas of how they're dealing with environmental matters, how they're formulating and discharging business plans that would include comments on maintenance and asset utilization, how the funds are being used, including what constitutes reasonable administrative costs, and how the funds are being applied to eventually demonstrate that county fairs could achieve some degree of sustainability. I know that, and I'm sure testimony following me will indicate that county fairs genuinely don't ever break even. But I'd like some indication, and that's what I'm asking for in the bill that I've drafted, that at least the boards and the professional management in charge of the fairs are looking towards trying to develop as close to sustainable as they can get. I also am asking for a demonstration of compliance with state and federal contracting laws, public budgeting, and the other mechanical responsibilities of boards that allow them to be responsive to public concerns. If the legislature considers giving county fairs public money, I think it's reasonable, in fact necessary, that the public know how their money's being spent and have the expectation that fairs are being operated utilizing best business practices that will eventually lead fairs, if not to a break-even, but perhaps a financial sustainability. I thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Questions for Representative Johnson? Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 2047 does something that I think is extremely important, and that is it looks at removing the sunset on a bill that we seem to have perennially before us in the 2.5 legislative sessions that I have served in this process. Every session we come and look at the governor's budget, which removes funding for county fairs, and every legislative session that I have served, we have figured out a way to put the money back in the budget for the county fairs. And the reason that we do that is because, first of all, I think the governor knows that we will. And secondly, county fairs are much more than just a tourism opportunity or a community celebration. They're, in fact, the culmination of a year's worth of work for the students that participate in the Future Farmers of America programs and 4-H programs. They're an outreach opportunity for dozens of state agencies and other public service entities that come to the community, to a place that they know where the entire community will gather, and offer the public education items that are necessary for energy conservation, for public health issues, for just a whole host of public education opportunities. They're, in fact, also economic development opportunities for local communities. You can't get a room in most of the small communities near the fair when the county fair is operating. You know, it's the old story of the medicine show and the tent revival. You know, pack the old ladies and bring all the babies and come on down to the fairgrounds. It is a great opportunity for the small community to get a better sense of itself, to come together as a community, and to partake in that public education forum that is offered by the county fairs. They are underfunded. To say they're underfunded is probably an understatement. Accrued deferred maintenance, the lack of the ability of local taxing districts, especially in rural areas, to adequately fund with the local tax budgets, just the difficulty in maintaining public facilities, as we all know, even the state fairgrounds has suffered from chronic underfunding, deferred maintenance, and lack of investment. But it's even truer in the smaller rural communities where the county fair serves a vital part not only of the community for its sense of self and celebration, but I'll go back to it as a focal point for education of children, education of the community at large, and a place where all generations seem to be able to connect and to partake in that public education process. This bill that's before us does something I think that we should have been able to noodle through before this, and that is that it gives us an opportunity not to have to fight the same battle every 2 years because of the certainty that we will have a funding source for the next several biennia through July 1, 2009. It seems to be sensible to me that we'd commit this level of certainty to local communities. I applaud the idea that we add some accountability to this process. With the certainty that this bill brings, we should ask for business plans, and we should ask for those communities to look forward and think about how they'll use this amount of money and justify the expenditure and the faith that Oregon taxpayers are putting into county fairs as an institution by the passage of this bill. So I see nothing in conflict between the testimony that we've had from Representative Johnson and the effect and the purpose of this bill. But what I do see is a conservation of energy, a conservation of effort, a statement that we support small communities and the celebration of rural living, and recognize that there's an educational purpose to be served with county fairs. And for all those reasons, I support House Bill 2047, and I hope that you'll vote this out of committee with the due pass recommendation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Brother Love.
Jared?
Yes,
Representative. Does that make Senator Farioli a conservationist?
I don't know.
He said a couple of them, this will conserve.
Mr. Chairman, I have always claimed the title conservationist and proud to do it.
Yeah. Good.
Thank you.
Wanted to hear that, didn't you?
Yeah.
Any other questions for either of our colleagues? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for our hearing, colleagues.
John McCulley.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Previous testimony, the frame ears around, so welcome, and we're all ears.
Good. My name is John McCulley. I'm with the Oregon Fairs Association here today, of course, to support House Bill 2047 and hopefully to answer any questions you might have about the bill. I think Senator Farioli very adequately explained why we're here, but I'll try to add a little bit more to that. County fairs have long been funded by the state through a statewide property tax up until the Depression, and then in 1933 it was determined that paramutual racing was going to come into the state, and as one of the bargaining chips to make that happen, the trade-off was that the funds that would come to the state from paramutual racing would be used for county fairs, and that was apparently the inducement that allowed paramutual racing bill to pass during the 1933 legislative session. That relationship between racing and fairs continued until the 1993 session. In the post-Major 5 era, it was determined that there was not enough general fund monies to support county fairs. The monies that were coming from racing were going to fairs, but if they didn't go to fairs, they would go into the general fund. And at that point, it was determined all of those funds should be going into the general fund. In addition, the trend in paramutual racing was downhill. And consequently, the fairs were not included in the governor's budget in 1993. At that point, the legislature determined that money should be allocated to fairs, and they allocated $2.5 million in lottery funds to county fairs. The 95 session, the same result. The governor did not include fairs in the budget. We once again came to the legislature And again, money was allocated from lottery funds for county fairs. During the 1995 session, we presented a bill similar to House Bill 2047. And the result of that was the creation of this trust fund that you've heard about. It has approximately $140,000 to $150,000 in it right now. And I don't have the exact figure, but I can get that. So it's not a huge amount of money. The intent was at some point to build up a fund large enough so that this biennial trek to the legislature seeking funding would not have to occur, that there would be enough money in the trust fund to allow the fairs to operate. And that's the ultimate intent of House Bill 2047, to establish a certain percentage of the lottery proceeds. We have 1.2% in the bill, but of course that is a negotiable number, and use the revenue to establish an amount that would continue to go to county fairs for operations as currently happens, general fund currently, and whatever amount exists above that allocation going into the trust fund, and then after a period of 8 years, that allocation would go away and the money in the trust fund would sustain the fairs from that point forward. And that's the basic outline of the bill. On the back of my testimony, I've just given you an idea of the impact that fairs have around the state. And this is data collected from all of the 36 county fairs. And we do have a county fair operating in all 36 counties. And you can see the number of adults and young people involved in the fairs in their respective counties. I would point out that the auction receipts of over $5 million indicates the amount of community support, the business people, the individuals in those communities who come forward to support kids. Needless to say, county fairs and the auctions have paid for a lot of college expenses over the years, and that is, of course, largely where those funds actually end up going. There are almost 3,000 businesses that operate on the county fairgrounds during the time of the fair, bringing employment opportunities and economic development opportunities to those communities. When the fair isn't on, you'll note on the information I provided that about 3.4 million visitors are on the fairgrounds during the course of a year. Some of them more than once, obviously, but still a significant number of people taking advantage of the fairgrounds throughout the year. I would also point out the number of community organizations that utilize the fair to raise money for their own projects. Over 1,000 nonprofit groups are involved with fairs to raise money for their own causes. And because of, I think, your awareness of fairs, their school clubs, their nonprofit organizations, any of a number of different groups who are using monies that they raised during the time of the fair for their own community activities. What it boils down to is a significant community event that enriches every corner of the state, and we think that it is very justifiable to appear before this legislature requesting this allocation of funds to support the activities that go on in every county. Mr. Chair, that's a quick overview, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Mr. McCulley? I guess I'd be curious if you could respond at all to some of Representative Johnson's comments. How do you receive those?
Mr. Chair, we received them positively. We assisted Representative Johnson in drafting what will be House Bill 3905, I believe, when it's eventually printed. We think that it makes sense to tie these bills together, if you will, that if there is going to be this commitment, and it is a significant commitment on the state's part, that we have an obligation to meet some standards. And I think House Bill 3905 would provide some of those standards.
And where is House Bill 3905 right now?
It's in the queue to be printed, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Yes, Representative Hess.
Why separate those two? Why not have those requirements in one bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hass, we suggested that to Legislative Council. We had actually asked for amendments to House Bill 2047 that would have done exactly that. And we were told because of the nature of this bill, it being a bill dealing only with the lottery, that they could not put other amendments into it. So we would have liked to have had them both together, but the explanation given to us by legislative council is that they could not do that, that we had to have a separate bill. That's why it has such a high number, because we were delayed in asking for that bill to be drafted because we had intended to amend House Bill 2047.
Well, we can certainly ask for that. Let's see, that would go to, wouldn't necessarily be a revenue bill, would it? That would go right to Ag.
Or to Jeff Krebs, or Jerry Krumm's committee.
Yeah, this one went to Ag first, didn't it?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. Yeah. Yes, it did.
Well, it's a question of how to tie these things together. I can talk with the chair of the committee about that. It would be nice somehow to move those even so they could get to the floor on the same day if they're going to move the separate bills. Okay, but I'll follow up on that. We'll try and coordinate this.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Beck.
Why is this in the Revenue Committee versus Ways and Means?
I asked for it. I don't remember. Paul,
I mean, it just doesn't seem like, it seems like, you know, we're not raising revenue here. We're sort of addressing that. Or why wouldn't this come straight to the floor, I guess, from Ag? I'm just kind of curious as to what, whether I'm missing something, and I guess the comments about why we can't amend the bill because it's related to the lottery. I guess I don't, maybe legislative council can come and explain that. But that.
Well, I'm looking at the relating clause relating to financing of county affairs, and that seems to me to be a pretty narrow relating clause, and there are amendments that deal with internal administration and other issues of management of county fairs. I suppose that would extend beyond the relating clause. I don't know. I think I'm pleased to have the bill here in the Revenue Committee. Yeah. I would suspect that's probably why we can't amend House Bill 3905 into it. Mm-hmm. I suppose another option would be for us to see if we could refer this back to the Ag Committee, if that's the committee that gets 3905. Yeah, we'll work that out.
Curious.
We want to do something with it, John.
I did have one question for John. Maybe I missed this. Are any of these fairs profitable? Do any of them make money?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beck, in terms of profitability, I'm going to say no. But it is a relative term. Some of them receive different sources of revenue that allow them to either not rely on any county assistance or not really depend too much on state assistance.
Mm-hmm.
Those would be county fairs that may have access to a hotel motel tax or a portion of that. But I think overall, because of the mission that they have of being a public resource, they oftentimes are allowing their facilities to be used at cost or below cost for kids. So it's very difficult to maintain a profitable operation under those circumstances. The short answer is no. I'm not aware of any that are, quote, profitable. They all have some type of subsidy somewhere along the way.
Further questions, Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is just sort of a lottery 101 question, so I don't know if I can answer it or John can answer it. But I'm seeing here it's 1.2% subject to the availability of unobligated funds. And then I'm noticing that 45% are dedicated to education, endowment, parks, debt service. So is the 1.2% the net proceeds taking out these three dedicated funds, of the, or is it of the entire fund?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the 1.2% applies to the net proceeds of lottery, regardless of how it's spent. What this says is there's pecking order. If you allocate 110%, say, of lottery resources, somebody loses.
Mm-hmm.
And this, what this does is establish the pecking order.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got 15% comes off the top for the Education Endowment Fund and 15% for Parks and Recreations, which are constitutional dedications.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, there's a primary dedication for the payment of any bonds that are backed by lottery revenues. And then you start moving down into statutory sorts of obligations. The 2.5% of net proceeds of video lottery, or excuse me, of net receipts of video lottery that goes to the counties is another allocation, which would be an obligation before you determine whether there's money enough to pay this 1.2%. Then you've got a state, again, not less than 1% for gambling addiction. That would have to be paid for. And so that's establishing what the bill does here is to try and lay out what are the things that would be considered obligations or of lottery revenues, and that would have to be met first before any money would go to the county fair account.
Okay, well, I guess my question, follow-up, Mr. Chair, sure. is that in the fiscal analysis that's proposed, it talks about should the measure pass, other funds have to be identified for school fund, economic development, gambling addiction, or reductions need to be taken, or a combination. But aren't there funds outside of these that are going to other purposes as well? Why would it take out of the three dedicated sources rather than taking out of monies that go for that lottery funds go to elsewhere?
I think the fiscal statement is a little misleading the way it's written. And I did talk with counsel as to how it should be read. And it's pretty clear in my mind and in counsel that the 1.2% applies to the net proceeds of the lottery and not to a balance which might be determined by subtracting.
Okay, thank you.
All right, anything else for John? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Laura Mickelson. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Laura Mickelson. I'm a junior at Canby High School. I'm currently the 2001 Canby FFA Chapter Treasurer and the newly elected 2001-2002 Mount Hood District Vice President. all levels of agriculture have been in my family. For example, the picture that is being passed around is a picture of my great-great-grandfather's produce exhibit at the Oregon State Fair in 1916. Not only that, my grandmother, Jerry Mickelson, was the fair manager for the Clackamas County Fairgrounds for over 20 years before passing on 11 years ago in 1990. The traditions of exhibiting foods and fibers have been passed on to me. I was a 4-H member for 5 years before becoming an FFA member. I've been in the FFA for 3 years now. As a producer of your food and fibers, it is very disappointing for me to see such an uproar over funding for fairs. Not giving the youth the opportunity to experience agriculture aspects in a positive leadership way is something that you should consider. Fair, a display as of handicrafts or agriculture products often together with entertainment. That is the definition of fair. If we start bringing in our high-tech economy, we might as well call it a trade show. Out with the old agriculture and in with the new high-tech technology. I want each of you to think hard before you take something very educational and worthwhile away from my family and I, the youth, and all agriculturalists, our county fairs and state fairs. It is very important that you understand there is more to the youth part of a fair, for example, the rides, etc. Fairs give kids the chance to showcase themselves. It also gives the public an opportunity to see what 4-H and FFA members can do. I am very proud of my projects, and I want the public to be proud of my projects as well as other youth accomplishments. The only way to do this is exhibit ourselves at fairs. I have put too much into my project, and I'm not about to see it all withered away because of high technology and lack of funding. I am the fifth generation of agriculturalists in my family. Please don't eliminate my chances at doing a good thing for our public, providing food and fibers. It's not just for me and my family. It is also for families all over the state. Let us youth continue our positive roles as agriculturalists. I urge each of you to have a positive vote on House Bill 2047. Finally, I leave you with this. the FFA code, to practice brotherhood, honor agricultural opportunities and responsibilities, and develop those qualities of leadership which an FFA member should possess.
Thank you very much. Laura, any questions? Appreciate you coming down to testify today.
Okay.
We'll finish up then with Gene Wilkinson. There you are.
Good afternoon. Chairman Shetterly, members of the committee, hello. My name is Jean Underhill Wilkinson, and I'm an associate director, one of three associate directors, and assistant general counsel with the Oregon Farm Bureau. And the Oregon Farm Bureau is very supportive of House Bill 2047, but aside from that, this is an opportunity where I can kind of tell my little personal story. I am a big fan of 4-H, FFA, and county fairs. I grew up in Dufour, Oregon. I went to high school. High school consisted of 55 students, 14 in my class. Sometimes the activities were limited in that rural area. From the time I was 9, I started in the 4-H program. We didn't have FFA in Dufour school. And I took beef animals, 4-H steers, to our Owasco County Fair, and a sewing project, a knitting project, and a demonstration project to every county fair every year. In fact, I spent the entire summer after school ended preparing for the county fair. That was, you know, the activity. There was no any other activities. You were so busy preparing for the county fair, which took place at the end of August. So I have a lot to be thankful for. I think that the skills that these 4-H programs and FFA programs and county fairs teach us are they can't be replaced with any other activity that teaches you the same type of skills. I remember my whole family, and taking those 4-H years, I eventually advanced to taking breeding stock and taking about 6 animals by myself to each county fair every year, which is a lot of work. You get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and start washing those animals and preparing them for show. And my entire family would try to analyze who the judge was and what his particular particular likes are for those animals and how they're supposed to be groomed. And we would debate for quite a long time whether I should do their tails in a big fluffy ball, or whether I should let them hang loose and natural, or whether on the breeding stock the female animal needed her hair, her little tussle up on the top of her head, whether it should be sticking up straight up in the air or some other direction. And, you know, that's really what life is about. It's about knowing who's going to be judging you and having the discipline and being prepared enough to win. And that's exactly what I did in the 4-H program all these years. So I do have a lot to be thankful for.
Just interrupt. It's sort of similar to the role of a lobbyist in a lot of ways.
Exactly. Now,
do you wear your tussle up?
I'm sort of a big fluffy ball guy. I just wanted you to know that.
Okay. I'll remember that. And if I had, I'll just close by saying, if I had one thing to thank for what I've been able to do so far in life, and attending Willamette University across the street and attending a law school at Northwestern School of Law, if I had one thing to thank for the skills that I learned in being able to attend and be successful at those schools, is the 4-H program and the county fairs that allowed me to prepare and show projects through the 4-H program. On a personal note, I'm very supportive of House Bill 2047, and the Farm Bureau Board of Directors certainly agrees. Thank you.
Thank you, Gene. Any questions, Representative Beck?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Gene, don't go away.
Answer this as well as anybody as a participant. Everybody's always trying to find more efficiencies in the world, and I'm wondering whether it makes sense to have 36 county fairs, whether young people in the shoes you were in would benefit as or almost as much if some of these county fairs were consolidated and regionalized. Has there been any thought to that? Rather than commenting on that, do you think people could still have a viable experience if Wheeler, Morrow, Sherman, Wasco County had one, Columbia Plateau fair and, Deschutes, Upper Deschutes Fair.
Yes. Well, John McCulley might be able to speak to that better than I, but just my initial thoughts are, you know, I attend the Wasco County Fair, and it's a very small fair. Mm-hmm. The beef animals there's probably only about 35 beef animals, 250 sheep probably, but everybody takes sheep. But there is a difference between the small fairs and the skills that you learn and the relationships that you build at these smaller fairs and these smaller groups than the state fair. I also participated in the state fair, which is, of course, a very large show. I have participated in other larger shows as well. And it's a whole different experience. You don't know the people as well. You don't acquire the relationships that you do at the smaller fairs. I am personally in support of maybe this isn't answering your question directly. Maybe two counties or three county may not end up to be such a large show. I'm personally supportive of the small county fairs. I just think you become one big family, and you are competing against people in your own community. And it's a small community environment, and I think kids thrive in those environments.
Okay. John?
Mr. Chair, if I might, John McCulley, Oregon Fairs Association. Those discussions have occurred, mainly starting in 1993 when the funding was eliminated. There were discussions on how we can do this more efficiently. Should two or three counties go together? I think those discussions will continue to occur. But as I think Ms. Wilkinson said, the situation is that you've got an identity with the county, and traveling distances that would be required for some counties if they were to go together. Logically, the smaller counties, you know, would be the targets for that type of consolidation. And putting Wheeler, Gillam, and Sherman counties together, for example, that's a huge distance to travel to participate. And I think that makes it very difficult. But I can tell you those will be ongoing discussions, because I don't think this issue is ever going to go away.
Representative Wick.
Mr. Chairman, I'm on a different topic here relative to the fairs. I'm uncertain about this language in Section 2, and maybe this is something Representative Carlson brought up, but I don't know that it's been answered in a way that, at least that I understand. Reading this, it says 1.2% of the net proceeds from the Oregon State Lottery. Well, the net proceeds are about $600 million, are they not?
I think we had 587.5 million on the revenue impact.
Well, that would make it about 7.2 million in a biennium. But the report here indicates a $4 million in the biennium.
The one I have is 3.6 and then an excess of 1.69, whatever. That's closer to 5. Oh, okay. Well,
fiscal analysis?
Well, I'm looking at Dick's revenue impact statement dated today. And that was for an 18-month
biennium. I think
that's for an 18-month biennium. So, would it be?
It's a 24-month
biennium. Well, I understand. 18 months of the biennium.
It is correct. Over 2 years, it would be about 7 million.
That would be about right.
That's
mm-hmm.
correct. So about $3.5 million would go into the fund after distribution.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I don't know that, John, when you came and talked to me about this bill previously, is that what you had in mind?
Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, I was going off the fiscal analysis that LFO had done with the $4 million figure. That was what I was thinking it would be. I have to tell you, we were trying to gauge that 1.2% to come up with about $6 million for the biennium, so that as the fund grew, there would be enough money in that fund at the end of the 8-year period to sustain, to replace as much of that $3.6 million as possible.
Even though you're going to get another certain number of million, clearly the next biennium, if this is put into statute.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, I was not aware of the revenue statement that had been prepared, putting it at, what, 7?
Over a 2-year period, yeah.
Over a 2-year period.
I was thinking it was more like 4 when you and I talked, and that's what the fiscal analysis says, that this is wrong.
That's correct.
It's more like 7.
Yep.
Yes.
Well, that raises the question I think I tried to articulate to Dick earlier. This has a sunset on it of July 1, 2009. Is it your intent that this would both a spinoff of the 3.6 or so to the county fairs through the county fund, and then at the same time build the Oregon County Fair Fund to the point that at the end of 2009, we don't need that other, that basically the county fair, the Oregon County Fair Fund, that would be sufficient to sustain that flow of revenues to the county fairs.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay, so this is a short-term tapping of the lottery proceeds in order to build that fund up until it can sustain itself.
Mr. Chair,
okay, that's why I thought those two played together. Okay. Anybody else wish to testify on House Bill 2047? Thank you, Gene. John, for coming back up. In that case, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2047. We'll see if we can get this thing back up to us in such a way that it coordinates with the other bill, 3905. John Phillips, you're here, and you're the only one signed up on House Bill 2869, but everybody else wants to hold that one over. So if I can, we'll hold over your testimony, too. We're getting a fiscal for 2831 coming around. With that, then, I think that will take care of the business for today. Paul, anything from you? 2869 will be back Thursday. Thank you. That's right. We've rescheduled that for Thursday. And with that, then we are adjourned.
So we only do the one bill?
Well, one more set came in, and this is a good question.
What did we do?
Well, the fiscal came in.